This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 7th of October 2016. Hello and welcome to the Winchester Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle dated the 6th of October 2016, which this week has been edited by Sue Frain, Pat Whitfield and Jane Thomas. Our readers today are Margot Meredith.
Hello.
John Richards.
Hello.
And Peter Lydiard.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, John Parker. The headlines this week are Care Home Facing Up to Closure Plan, Community Centre is given a £132,000 refit, and Wildcat sparks chatter in Valley. So we start with the story behind the first headline.
Care home facing up to closure plan. A Winchester City Centre care home for the elderly is poised to shut. 32 full and part-time jobs are at risk, and 12 residents would have to move when Devenish House closes. The home in Southgate Street has been operated by St John's Winchester Charity since opening in 1994. The charity launched consultations with the staff this week after breaking the news to them on Tuesday. Some will be offered jobs at Moorside, St John's care home on Derndake, which is to be enlarged. The charity director, Clive Cook, told the Chronicle that Devenish House was becoming increasingly financially unviable and is getting harder to attract residents, with occupancy rates falling from 94% in 2014 to just over half capacity today. He said none of the 12 residents would be moved until they had been rehomed. The date for closure is dependent on when the last residents have new homes, said Mr. Cook. It is expensive to maintain the 18th century building, and the introduction of the national living wage of £9 an hour in 2020 would add to the overheads. Mr. Cook said, "It is an extremely difficult decision for myself and the board, but it is the right decision. The well-being of residents has always been our priority, and if Devenish House closes as proposed, we are committed to working closely with the 12 remaining residents and their families, and with the commissioners, Hampshire County Council, to find suitable alternative care homes. We hope to offer some residents an opportunity to move to a local home with much improved facilities. We will do all in our power to support residents and their families at this difficult time. In order to maximise the choices available to them, we will provide a financial top-up for residents above and beyond Hampshire County Council and the NHS fees." Mr. Cook said, "It has been increasingly challenging to provide high-quality care in this Grade 2 listed building." Mr. Cook added, "The accommodation is spread over three floors and is mainly small rooms that lack full ensuite provision, and some of which are not suited to delivering specialist nursing care. Furthermore, the communal facilities are limited, and there is no garden or meaningful outdoor space." The news will come as a surprise to many, as it only opened 20 years ago and had a modern extension added to the rear. St John's operates several sites in the city centre, with 24 units at St John's North, 27 at St John's South, and 25 at Mary Magdalen off Colebrook Street. The future of Devenish House is unclear. Possible uses include offices, a hotel, or upmarket flats. It is across the road from several upmarket developments, including St Thomas and Provost Place. St John's Winchester is planning an internal extension to provide an additional four rooms at Moorside, its specialist dementia care home in Durngate, which is currently caring for 27 residents and providing daycare services. Work is planned to start next month and be completed in February 2017.
Community Centre is given a £132,000 refit. The Winchester Community Centre has been given a new lease of life, thanks to a dramatic transformation. Winnall Community Centre has been given a sparkling refurbishment thanks to funding from Hampshire County Council. The Community Centre in Garbett Road is run by Winnall Community Association and remained open while the improvements were made over the summer. Now visitors will benefit from a brand new cafe area, as well as improved storage, toilets and flooring. Energy saving and emergency lighting has been integrated, meaning that the venue is more cost efficient than before. Hampshire County Council helped stump up £132,000 towards the improved facilities, and the money came from the Community Buildings Capital Fund. The centre is popular among different age groups in the community, including a joint venture with the Salvation Army to provide a breakfast club for all Winnall primary school children. Ron Fenich from Winnall Community Association said, "On behalf of Winnall Community Association and the wider community, we thank Hampshire County Council for this vital funding. I would also like to thank the many business sponsors who have come forward and generously donated their time, materials and workforce to help Winnall with the centre development. We look forward to welcoming residents and organisations through the doors to enjoy the updated facilities, and we know this vibrant environment will make a big difference to people's lives." Opening the centre was Hampshire County Council's Executive Member for Culture, Recreation and Countryside, Councillor Andrew Gibson. Councillor Gibson said, "Community centres are an important lifeline to people of all ages, with neighbourhoods using them for a range of social activities. It's great to know that the Winnall community now has a modern facility which can be run in a sustainable and more cost-effective way."
Wildcat sparks chatter in Valley. It is the mysterious Moggy that has been the talk of the Itchen Valley. Residents and even a priest have spotted what they describe as a wild cat in recent days. The sightings have baffled locals who are unsure of what type of cat it is, or if an exotic animal from a Marwell Zoo had escaped. One startled eyewitness was Assistant Priest of Itchen Valley Benefice, Reverend Alex Pease, who was driving in Chilland Lane when he saw the cat in the road on a Sunday evening. Reverend Pease said, "When I saw it on Sunday evening, it was just after dark and I was driving along Chilland Lane and pictured it in my headlights and I thought, what on earth is that? I would say it's larger than a normal cat with a much larger and bushier tail, but the thing was its distinctive black face and pointed ears. It turned round and looked at me at one stage and then sauntered off down the path." He reiterated that the creature should not concern residents and added, "It is not an alarming case of lock up your dogs and protect your baby situation. It's too small for that." It's not the first time a mysterious cat has been seen near Winchester. In 2010, near Allsford, a big cat, dubbed the Beast of Ropley, was seen crossing Gascoigne Lane. At around the turn of the millennium, there was a sighting of a big cat at Avington Park near Itchen Abbas. A Marwell Zoo spokeswoman said none of their animals have escaped. Marwell has never had genets in the collection, but does have a couple of species of wildcat, including serval and ocelot. "We can guarantee that all of our animals are accounted for at Marwell Zoo, so this sighting is completely unrelated to us. On further inspection and with the help of Luke Hunter, who is President and Chief Conservation Officer of Panthera, a charity devoted to protecting big cats, says he believes the cat is likely to be a big domestic cat or a Bengal. City Councillor for Aylesford and the Itchen Valley, Kim Gottlieb, said, "It's been the talk of the area. Everybody was fascinated and interested to know how they are concerned about who is looking after it, as no one has admitted to owning it, as far as I'm aware."
That concludes the headline stories, and we continue with the death announcements. Cartwright, Jacqueline Anne, known as Jackie Cartwright, on the 3rd of October, aged 72. Gomer, Clive Gomer, at home on the 25th of September, aged 82. Harrison, Jane Margaret Harrison, on the 2nd of October, aged 66. Nicholas, Geoffrey Nicholas, on the 27th of September, aged 81. Reed, Michael Kenneth Reed, on the 24th of September. Theakston, Jean Theakston, at home on the 1st of October, aged 79. Wright, Nicholas Wright, at home on the 2nd of October. And now we have Christian Comment.
And this week, Christian Comment is written by Mary Gray, and she entitles it St. Francis, A View Beyond the Bird Bath. If any saint has been sentimentalized, it is Il Poverello Francis, the poor man of Assisi. He is judged to be the most popular saint of our times, yet his memory is diminished by commercial depictions and his popularity in promoting bird baths. There is so much more to his true legacy. This is vibrant in the orders he founded, in songs and poetry, and in his extraordinary effort for peace through interfaith. It is easy to see how Francis's ideas resonate with contemporary ideas. He is especially popular amongst peace and environmental activists. He respected nature and regarded all creatures as his brothers and sisters. He treated women equally with men. His friendship with St. Clair is famous, and saw God as both mother and as father. Like Jesus, he attracted crowds when he preached, spending a great deal of time with the poor and the sick. He set a standard of poverty that was so high, his friars struggled to maintain it. Francis realized the dangers of a church that was too worldly, and he tried to reform it. Although loyal to the church, his sense of direct communion with God was so powerful that what he taught as God's will was not always consistent with the church's teaching. His charismatic leadership created a tension with the church, partially resolved by giving him control of an order outside the regular ranks of the priesthood. St. Francis forbade members of the third order he had founded from bearing arms, teaching that non-violence is the higher way. It is his extraordinary efforts for peace that illuminate our path. In 1219, St. Francis and Brother Illuminato accompanied the armies of Western Europe to Damietta, Egypt, during the Fifth Crusade. His desire was to speak peacefully with Muslim people about Christianity, even if it meant dying a martyr's death. He tried, but failed, to stop the Crusaders from attacking the Muslims at the Battle of Damietta. After the defeat of the Western armies, Francis crossed the battle line, was arrested and beaten by Arab soldiers, and eventually was taken to the Sultan, Malik el-Kamil, nephew of the great Saladin. The Sultan was known as a generous, fair ruler. At Damietta alone, he offered peace to the Crusaders five times, and according to Western accounts, treated defeated Crusaders humanely. His goal was to establish a peaceful coexistence with Christians. After an initial attempt by Francis and the Sultan to convert each other, both realized that the other already knew and loved God. Francis and Illuminato remained with Al-Kamil for 20 days, discussing prayer and the mystical life. When Francis left, Al-Kamil gave him an ivory trumpet, still preserved in the crypt of the Basilica of San Francesco in Assisi. This extraordinary encounter is a paradigm for interfaith dialogue. Despite differences, people of prayer can find common ground in their experiences of God if they truly listen, respect the other, and genuinely long for peace.
Next, we have the letters to the editor of the Hampshire Chronicle. There's quite a crop this week, but there's no particular burning issue topic. If you yourself would like to send a letter to the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so either by telephoning 01962 860 836. That's 01962 860 836. Emailing letters@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. That's letters@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. Or writing to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO238. AL. That's 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO238AL. So we'll start off with the first letter.
And this first letter is from Chris Hesketh Roberts. This is on behalf of Winchester Green Party, and it's about pollution. Sir, a Liberal Democrat newspaper for the Winchester Eastgate Ward has an article on the need to reduce air pollution in central Winchester, and stresses the point by showing three councillors kitted out in dust masks in Upper Brook Street. We in the Green Party have been campaigning about the poisoning of Winchester's air for many years, and we are still party to a formal complaint against the city and county councils. Of course, we welcome the rather late expression of concern by the Lib Dems and hope that they will start to be active on the matter in the councils. Recent events, however, show that they have some way to go. The City Council's Planning Committee approved the Friarsgate car park partial reconstruction, despite the clear evidence that this would add to the mortality burden of air pollution on the residents of central Winchester. This entirely unnecessary, indeed gratuitous action was rubber-stamped unanimously by a committee including four Lib Dem councillors. We hope there will be no more equivocation of this kind in future. We invite the Lib Dem group to show some real immediate commitment by censuring the decision by the council to reduce its monitoring of air pollution at the end of this year. Just at the time when all the evidence is showing that diesel particulates are killing countable numbers of people in Winchester every year, the council has decided to stop measuring these due to, quote, budget constraints, unquote. That's from Chris Hesketh Roberts for Winchester Green Party, Alsford Road, Winchester.
David Selby writes, "Don't cut budgets. Sir, I was not at all clear what the point of Mr. James Anderson's letter, September the 22nd, about grammar schools, selection and children's brains was about. Hampshire operates a tertiary system, whereby all children go to a secondary school until 16. After 16, or GCSE, they transfer to a college, where they can proceed through A-levels to a university or enrol for more vocational courses. Having witnessed the development of this system in another authority, I am convinced that it is the best, and Hampshire residents do not know how lucky they are compared with other systems that I have come into contact with. I think I am right in saying that there are no schools in Hampshire with over 2,000 pupils. Being comprehensive does not disadvantage pupils, but size can. Grammar schools are not grammar schools without sixth forms, but young people nowadays would like to get away from the constrictions of school at the age of 16 and would prefer to be treated in a more adult way in a college. Moreover, selection for grammar schools of, say, 25% of the cohort means that there are 75% who have failed. And believe me, from my own experience, that feeling of failure stays with the majority for the rest of their lives, even if they rise above it and get to university eventually. On the whole, the political system has failed this group by putting more resources pro rata into potential university students and not enough resources into those young people who would have benefited from those apprenticeships that were shut down decades ago and only just revived. Finally, I agree with the Vice-Chancellor of Oxford University, who felt the universities were not properly equipped to take schools under their wings. But closer links between secondary schools and colleges for further education would be of great benefit to those not aspiring to university places. It seems a pity that college budgets are being severely cut at a time when they could be most useful to those young people who need them most. And that is from David Selby, West Hill Road North, South Wanston.
Sharon Montgomery writes, "Sir, I am pleased to read that Scott Whitby's studio are to take on the task of revamping St Maurice's Covert, and I'm sure the work will be sensitively undertaken on this historically important site. One sentence in the report disturbed me. Quote, current bike provision at the space may have to be decreased." Unquote. I do hope this means that the provision for locking one's bike up securely is not to be done away with, but merely relocated to somewhere conveniently convenient for the city centre and undercover. The racks in Market Lane are fewer in number and are sometimes obstructed by delivery vans or the coffee caravan. So the covert is currently the best place to secure a bike. Sharon Montgomery, Peninsula Square, Winchester.
Willis Way. No, I beg your pardon, that's its address. I'm sorry. Jonathan Walker of Willis Way, as you'll see at the end. Jonathan Walker says that toilets are tacky. Sir, I definitely agree with Julius Sanderson's comments in the Chronicle, letters September 22nd, on the state of the public loos by St Maurice Covert. I can only comment on the gents, of course, but the overall impression as you enter the building is pretty tacky, literally, and does not give a good impression at all to tourists and visitors, never mind the locals. The window display of all things toilet has always been interesting and innovative, but even that display could do with a revamp and a good clean. I have to say that before you even start to walk up the stairs to the gents, you get a feel for what might await you at the top. The stairs themselves are in disrepair and grubby. I hate to touch anything on the way up, as the handrails and walkway area to the loos are just as bad. When you do get to the toilets, the state of the cubicles and toilet pans is often disgusting and smelly with broken seats. Best to just hover if you are desperate enough to need to use them. The urinals are functional but just as tacky, and the state of the sinks, often with no soap dispensers that work, is less than pleasant with taps that either don't work or don't stay on. And to finish it all off, the hand dryers are useless as they don't stay on even with a lot of hand waving, and if used to completely dry your hands, you would be there for minutes with a queue behind you. At the last visit, one was not even working at all. All in all, not a pleasant experience, so I tend to use McDonald's if I get caught short in town, but shush, don't tell them. Come on, Winchester, isn't it about time that these toilets had a complete makeover? After all, they are the main ones in the High Street, and once the covert is revamped, They will need upgrading to complement the new works, won't they? And I can give you his proper name now. That's from Jonathan Walker, Willis Way, Kingsworthy.
This is a letter from Councillor Rob Humby, County Councillor. Sir, by now, people will be aware of some changes at Hampshire's Household Waste Recycling Centres. That's HWRC for short. Continuing cuts in government funding, now less than half what it was 5 years ago, meant we couldn't afford to offer the same service as in the past. So we've made up for the shortfall in as fair a way as we could, while meeting residents' priority of keeping all sites open. We are offering a new weekday service for small businesses, supporting local businesses at no cost to council taxpayers. Until now, HWRCs were for residents only, but now small firms have this local and convenient option on a chargeable basis. I'm pleased we found a way where the type of waste accepted isn't changed. While I appreciate people have become used to having their DIY waste accepted, we have no obligation to accept non-household waste. It is expensive for us to dispose of, so there is now a charge for specific materials: soil, rubble, plasterboard, cement-bonded asbestos. Compared to the overall cost of a DIY project or skip hire, I hope people will agree that the charges are fairly low, reasonable and fair. I've heard concerns of increased fly tipping, but I don't believe that overnight Hampshire residents are likely to turn into criminals to save £10 on a few bags of rubble. I think most residents, like me, are proud to live here and care about their community. I'm not sure that people who fly tip have ever visited their local HWRC. Most fly-tipped material is on an industrial or commercial scale, and that wouldn't have previously been accepted at our sites. Fly-tipping is illegal, irresponsible, a blight on our county and a burden on council taxpayers. It won't be tolerated. We're working closely with district councils, environment agency and police on zero tolerance. For the rest of us, our local tips remain open and free for disposing of household waste. With more HWRCs in Hampshire than any local authority in England, I think that's a pretty good position to be in. And that's from Councillor Rob Hunby, who's Executive Member for Environment and Transport, Hampshire County Council, The Castle, Winchester.
S. Goodwin writes, such a great race. Sir, as a competitor in the inaugural Winchester Half Marathon, I just wanted to say what a great event this was. It was extremely well organised, and a well thought out route showed to all the participants and their families what a great destination Winchester is to visit. Everyone involved in organising this race should be congratulated, and hopefully, like the Winchester Criterium, it will become an established annual event on the increasingly successful, quote, Reasons to Visit Winchester, quote, calendar. No doubt the usual Winchester wingers or whingers will voice their extremely negative views on too many people coming into the city. But hopefully, the majority of the businesses will welcome the extra footfall and potential income generation. S. Goodwin, Goringfield, Winchester.
This next letter, which curiously doesn't have a name and address at the bottom, is entitled Traffic Chaos Shock. Sir, almost everyone in Winchester must have been aware of the exceptional traffic chaos in the city last Saturday, made even worse than usual by the accident in the High Street. Those who use the Central Car Park and Middlebrook Street know that when these conditions prevail in the city centre, extensive delays also occur around the Central Car Park. It was with relief and amazement last Saturday morning that I noticed that two anonymous young men had stationed themselves outside the car park and proceeded to assume authority for clearing and directing traffic. Their authority and determination not only prevented a complete standstill, but proved so successful that free flowing traffic was restored.
Marvin B. Naylor writes, fast food abuse while out busking. Sir, I was out in Winchester High Street today playing my guitar and being largely ignored by the populace, but not by five druggies, who, fresh from McDonald's around the corner, formed an arc in front of me and began taunting me. I ignored them and carried on playing La Vie en Rose. Then one of them dropped or spit a sizeable portion of his burger with lettuce onto my opened guitar case. I heard, "Sorry, mate," and they all laughed and went away. Seconds later, two young men came up and said, "Don't worry about them, we appreciate you," and despite my protestations, picked off all the burger and lettuce from my case and coins and put in some fresh coins of their own. I would like to thank those two kind young men from the bottom of my heart. That's from Marvin B. Naylor, Greenhill Road, Full Flood, Winchester.
Richard Parfitt says, what bad drivers? Sir, I would like to know if students that drive know the highway code. You see them driving the wrong way in Walpole Road, even though there are white arrows on the road. They even block your drive. They park on corners and on white lines as if students do not have to follow the law. Why? It's time the City Council had a phone number to use to get these cars removed from driveways and on lines. They should even put up cameras to catch the ones going the wrong way before someone gets knocked over. Richard Parfitt, Walpole Road, Stanmore.
Peter Jones, RIBA, says, enlarge museum. Sir, I am sure the late Roger Brown, whom I knew professionally, would have had mixed feelings over the latest development in the ongoing saga of the splendid model which he created, not just for his own pleasure, but for the benefit of the city and its future generations, Chronicle, September 22nd. The city, which has not shown its appreciation, as he no doubt would have liked, instead storing the model away for years and discussing it occasionally to show they haven't forgotten it. Sadly, he passed away waiting for the day, which may now have arrived. Or has it? The latest proposed venue, we are told, is the City Museum. But the museum has been there all along, so why the sudden realisation that it's the perfect solution? Could it be that the old shops, part of our heritage, were in the way, and now apparently it's proposed to remove them? But to where? The shops are tangible evidence of what the model portrays and must remain with it. There was recently a letter in the Chronicle from a visitor pointing out the obvious. Our museum is far too small for our historic city. All right in its day, perhaps, but much more of its history has now been revealed and the evidence is inevitably stored away out of sight. Adjoining the museum, there is quite a large two-storey building, which has been unoccupied for many years. Before it eventually becomes another restaurant, is this not the perfect extension waiting to happen? Just a thought. Peter Jones, RIBA, Chester Road, Winchester.
This is a letter from Thomas Edward Burgess. Sir, I am writing to you to express my deep concern about the state of public houses in Winchester. As a previous landlord and licensee and a resident of Winchester for 25 years, it is of concern to me when new management decide to change a pub's name. For instance, a certain management company has chosen to rename the Market Inn to the William Walker and the India Arms to Alfie's. Now, this is all very well, but many people rely on old pub names for directions. Also, as Winchester has a proud military connection, the India Arms was known to the squaddies as the NCO's mess. It still is, but does changing the name for a company brand reflect the honour and sacrifice that went into calling it the India Arms? In my humble opinion, it does not. I remain severely disappointed. It's Thomas Edward Burgess, Firmstone Road, Winnell, Winchester.
Kate McIntosh, MBE, RIBA, writes, "The council is insane." Sir, one sign of insanity is the repetition of unfortunate behaviours while expecting different outcomes. Winchester City Council shows these symptoms. They have been repeatedly advised by the City of Winchester Trust that their brief for station approach was defective. Not all aspects were bad, but these were the ones that were strengthened. One of the two finalist firms of architects, at last released from their gagging order, has stated in no uncertain terms that the defective outcome was the result of a defective brief, which became even more restrictive during the competition process. Yet WCC persisted in pressing ahead with that very brief with only minor amendments. They were also advised, as early as summer 2014, by myself, among others, to seek the expertise of the RIBA Competition Office. This they eventually did, but only when their procurement route was already determined, and the experience of that world-class organisation remained only of peripheral benefit. Now we learn that, having stated that now the RIBA will be fully involved, a senior staff member has already written to architectural firms before that advice has been sought. That member of staff writes of a concept submission. The submitted schemes were no such thing. They were fully worked up designs which the restrictive brief demanded. This is why it cost the competition so dearly in staff time. He should study the RIBA plan of work and better inform himself. As the architects now advise, a better route would be to hold a feasibility or ideas competition out of which a detailed brief could be developed. Lastly, this back-to-front process is planned to run concurrently with the development of a supplementary planning document for the regeneration of Central Winchester and the comprehensive study by WCC and HCC into the transport needs in and around the city for the foreseeable future. Surely the latter, and preferably both, of these two ought to precede any further proposals for station approach. WCC was advised of this need at the time of the Tibbalds report in summer 2013. Kate McIntosh, MBE, RIBA, West End Terrace, Winchester.
This next letter is a joint letter from two people who are Peter North, chairman of Trinity Winchester, and Linda Gregory, chairman of Winchester Church's Night Shelter. And it's entitled, "We Need State Aid." "Sir, we write in response to your comment piece, 1 million pound windfall, a poison chalice, which suggested that this substantial donation shared between Trinity Winchester and Winchester Church's Night Shelter was likely to result in statutory sources of funding being sharply reduced, if not cut entirely. Even with the generous donation from the Deflog VQ Trust, Trinity and the Night Shelter know that the need for the support we provide continues, as does the necessity to develop and provide additional support, services and facilities where we can. As a result, the need for statutory support is as great as ever, and fundraising efforts and requests for volunteers will continue." Peter North, chairman of Trinity Winchester, said, "Our gift of £500,000 is restricted to a capital project, the precise nature of which is being discussed with our partners and stakeholders. Therefore, our ongoing revenue fundraising efforts and need for statutory support from Winchester City Council, Hampshire County Council and other key supporters remain essential. As a WCC-funded partner organisation, we will involve the Council in our decision-making. We plan to use this money to deliver services to a greater number of homeless and other vulnerable people. We will create on our own or with others a sustainable project to expand the help we give to those in need. Linda Gregory, chairman of Winchester Church's Night Shelter, added, "This very generous donation from the Deaflog VQ Trust will allow us to continue and expand our services in order to help those who are experiencing homelessness in and around Winchester. We rely on an amazing staff and volunteer team and a mix of funding, and we are very fortunate not to have experienced financial problems since our foundation. We extend our heartfelt thanks to the individuals and private and government organisations who support our work, both financially and with their time. Homelessness is a complex problem, with many paths leading to it, and both Trinity and the Night Shelter will continue to work hard and with compassion to meet the needs which it generates." That joint letter is from Peter North, Chairman, Trinity Winchester, and Linda Gregory, Chairman, Winchester Church's Night Shelter.
That concludes the letters, and we now move on to items of historical interest, and we have them from 200, 100, 50 and 25 years ago.
200 years ago was October the 7th, 1816, and it's headed Commons Repair. Since the close of the last session of Parliament, some alteration has taken place in the House of Commons. The fireplace and grate in the lobby are removed to make room for a grand Russian stove, which emits more warmth than the grate did. And at the same time, no fire is seen. The stove is building and will be complete by the meeting of Parliament. The floor of the body of the house has been newly laid and many other repairs done.
100 years ago, October the 7th, 1916. Sandwich thanks. A certain lawyer who was a candidate for a municipal office went out canvassing one day and knocked at a cottage door. The door was opened by a woman. "Is your husband in, Mrs. So-and-so?" inquired the lawyer. "No, sir," was the reply, "but I know what you want. My husband is sure to vote for you because you got him off for stealing that ham last week." No, alleged. "It was the alleged stealing of the ham," corrected the lawyer. "Alleged be blowed," was the woman's smiling reply. "We've got a bit of it left still. Let me give you a sandwich out of it, sir."
This is from 50 years ago, October the 8th, 1966. Speed limit working. Hampshire Notebook. The 70 miles per hour speed limit on our highways, like so many temporary measures introduced by the present government, seems to be assuming an air of permanency. The Whitehall statisticians have produced their figures, blandly accepted by one and all to be accurate, and claim that the limit has cut down the accident rate. Perhaps encouraged by this, the Minister of Transport has announced an extension of the so-called temporary limit. There is no doubt that many motorists need to be curbed, and that the majority of the roads of this country are unfit to take travelling at any great speed over 70 miles per hour. Yet there is still a large body of opinion which is of the mind that such limits are unnecessary on motorways.
And 25 years ago, October the 4th, 1991, heading is MPs for Hire. The business contacts of Winchester MP John Brown and other members of Parliament come under close critical scrutiny in a new book MPs for Hire. Written by investigative journalist Mark Hollingsworth, a full 20 pages are devoted to Mr. Brown, who was suspended from the House of Commons for 20 days last year after a select committee decided he had not disclosed important business interests. MPs for Hire takes a hard look at political lobbying and asks, is your MP there to serve your interests? Or is he there to serve his own and those of the private commercial sector? Is he in the pay of a multinational conglomerate, dubious foreign agency, brewery giant, or weapons manufacturer?
Next, we have the Chronicle comment, which will be followed by First Person.
And this is from the Hampshire Chronicle in its 243rd year. It's entitled, Care Home Mistake with Best Intentions. In some ways, the most interesting question about the likely closure of Devonish House Care Home in Winchester is not the reason why it may close, but why it was opened at that location in the first place. The home was launched as recently as 1994 in a converted Georgian townhouse that had most recently been a hotel. A modern metal and glass extension was built on the rear. Now, less than 25 years later, the building is regarded by St. John's Winchester Charity to be unfit for purpose. Demand for its places has been dropping, and the overheads are rising for a three-storey building that is unable to have many of the facilities and equipment now deemed necessary. There are too many stairs, and the rooms are too small. The charity says it was a difficult decision, but a necessary one. With the benefit of hindsight, Devonish House does look like a mistake, albeit one made with the best of intentions. St. John's, whose roots in the Winchester community stretch back to the Middle Ages, provides dozens of flats for the elderly. That costs a lot of money. But as the owner of more than 50 properties, many in the city centre, the charity has a steady income. It's good news that it's expanding Moorside, the care home for dementia sufferers. We await with interest to hear its future plans.
First Person this week is written by Ron Allison, and the title he's given his piece is The First Signs of a Plan. So now, more than 3 months since the European Union referendum, we have the barest outline of a timetable for Brexit. At the Conservative Party conference last weekend, the Prime Minister, Theresa May, promised she would start the Article 50 process by next March. This, in turn, will allow 2 years of full negotiations to get underway. Britain, with the European Union as a whole, and with the 27 remaining countries on an individual basis. All at the same time? Who knows? And good luck to those responsible for them. At least Mrs. May is sensibly taking her time, in contrast to Jeremy Corbyn, the Labour Party leader, who thinks we should invoke Article 50 immediately. Either way, there are two basic premises for debate. One is what Britain wants its future relationship with Europe to be. The other? Well, the EU has not declared its hand yet either, except to reject the idea of some sort of unofficial bargaining beginning now. So again, we are all left pretty much in the dark with our own thoughts. One of mine is that the United Kingdom will most certainly not get all that it wants. Much more Brexit to come over the next few months, that I can promise you, or perhaps threaten. Anyway, enough of the political side of things. Let's think about golf. And oh dear, not a good weekend for Europe. It was almost back to the old days when the United States of America played Britain and Ireland without continental involvement. It was good to watch the Ryder Cup and some splendid golf from some remarkable individuals. Surely all golfers are delighted that we and Europe are united for this great tournament every 2 years. Formula One also transcends national boundaries, far beyond Europe, of course. On Sunday, in Malaysia, Britain's Lewis Hamilton suffered cruel bad luck when his German car, a Mercedes, caught fire with Hamilton otherwise, a certain winner of the Malaysian Grand Prix, left distraught. His great rival, Nico Rosberg, also a Mercedes driver and a German, seemed somewhat less so. And so inevitably we come to football. Now, this is the game that truly unites nations in a way that, say, cricket never can. Even the Americans have got the hang of it at last, though they insist on calling it soccer. Fair enough. In England now, the ambition of the top clubs is, yes, to win the Premier League, but not only for itself. The European Champions League is the real target, the chance to mix it with Barcelona, Real Madrid, Bayern Munich, Paris Saint-Germain, and the rest of the big boys and their superstars. This season, our own Southampton will be facing Inter Milan in the Europa League, both at St Mary's and in the San Siro Stadium. Great days for the Saints. Professional football in the top English leagues is awash with money these days, and it is sadly no surprise when from time to time something unpleasant turns up. It was a shock, though, when Sam Allardyce allowed himself to be seduced into the indiscretions that cost him his job as England's manager. His almost childlike delight at the time of his appointment to his dream job made his subsequent misery all the more telling. Allardyce's going leaves England once again looking for a new manager, and once again the question is asked, should he be English? So alongside regaining our sovereignty, adjusting our border controls, and wondering on a national scale where we will be able to buy and to sell, we have this bothersome non-Brexit problem. We can't blame Mr. Cameron for this one, though.
A few events that are happening, which may be of interest to you. On Saturday, the 15th of October, in Winchester Guildhall, from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m, there will be a craft and gift market. On Wednesday, the 19th of October, starting at 11 a.m. in Southampton Guildhall, Solent Site are holding an exhibition of useful aids and gadgets for the visually impaired. And you can find out more information about that if you telephone 02380 769 882. That's 02380 769 882. And then on Thursday, the 27th of October, from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. at the Wells Place Centre at Eastleigh, Open Site is holding a similar exhibition of aids and gadgets for the visually impaired. Parking you can do at the Swan Centre in Eastleigh. And if you'd like more information about that, you should telephone 02380 646 380. That's 02380 646 380. And then Brendan Kerr hold a friendship club at Week Community Centre on Taplings Road. It's held on alternate Fridays at 2 p.m. from 2 p.m. to 4 p.m. and there's a charge of £4. The next meeting is on Friday the 21st of October, when there will be entertainment by the Wessex Chordsmen. Lighting up times. Today, Friday the 7th of October, the sun rose at 7:15 in the morning and will set at 6:30 in the evening. And then Wednesday of next week, that's the 12th, sunrise is at 25 past 7 in the morning, and sunset is at 20 past 6 in the evening. We now move on to items of general news interest.
Yes, the first item is headed Molly's Den Set to Close Doors. An indoor emporium in Winchester is set to close after losing a long-running planning battle. Molly's Den in Moorside Road, Winnell, has been told that it must shut and leave within 4 months after the planning inspectorate dismissed an appeal by Director Dean Souter. It was opened in August 2014 despite having no planning consent for retail trade, and building Molly's Den was in breach of a planning control. The council refused a planning application in May 2015, and Mr. Souter appealed after an enforcement notice was issued by Winchester City Council in November. But as all of this took place, it has been a case of business as usual, as trade has continued, as owners felt that it would be in Winchester City Council's interest that it stayed open. There are other Molly's Dens across the south, including one in Bournemouth, which also opened without planning permission but was given a temporary consent for 3 years. Mr. Souza said that if they have to close, they will look for alternative premises in the area, and said they have 100 traders who use it, and overall there are 10 staff at Molly's Den and Toast Cafe. Mr. Souza said in a statement, "We are disappointed that the council feel they are unable to grant us planning permission, as there are a number of empty units on the Winnell Industrial Estate, and we thought that it would be in our best interest and their best interest to have our premises occupied. We are at the far end of Moorside Road with our own car park and have received no complaints regarding parking or traffic movement. Molly's Den has been a great asset to Winchester with local and national advertising, and many traders and customers travel for miles to visit. We have helped to advertise the vintage market that is held in Winchester on the first Sunday of each month, and we would like to think we have helped to put Winchester on the map as a vintage destination. Many of the items sold are unique to Molly's Den and cannot be found for sale elsewhere. We are at present trading successfully in Bournemouth, New Milton and West Bay, with plans to open other Molly's Dens in the future."
1,000 runners and walkers enjoy the Clarendon Way. More than 1,000 runners took part in the Clarendon Marathon between Salisbury and Winchester on Sunday. It was a gloriously sunny day as keen runners and walkers passed along the ancient Clarendon Way between the two cathedral cities, taking them past some familiar and iconic sites, from Salisbury Cathedral Spire to Farley Mount in Winchester. The picture-perfect race is 90% off-road, with the route following tracks which have changed little over the centuries. It was muddy in places after rain the previous day. Thomas Dell, 20, from Aylesbury, was the first man to cross the finishing line at King's School in Winchester, completing the challenging 26.2-mile route in 3 hours, 5 minutes and 15 seconds. The first woman to finish was Aisha Smislona, age 35, from Swindon, with her time of 3 hours, 22 minutes, 17 seconds. She said, "It was tough. It was muddy. I'm just so glad to have finished. The weather has been wonderful and the atmosphere great." The first relay team to finish the full marathon was Costless Plus Mum from West End in Southampton. Brothers Max, aged 22, and Sam, 17, ran with their dad, Peter, aged 52, plus family friend Michaela McCallum, Winchester and District Athletics Club, after their own mum, Karen Rushton, had to pull out at the last moment due to a running injury. The overall winner of the half marathon, which started in Broughton, was Paul Pallister from Dibden Purlieu, in a time of 1 hour, 22 minutes, 19 seconds. One man and his dog ran together. Howard Clark ran the half marathon with Skye, a German short-haired pointer, who enjoyed a victory roll in the grass after crossing the finishing line. Among the oldest runners to take part was John Moon, aged 75, from Andover, who ran his first Clarendon Marathon in 2003, aged 62. Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Jane Rutter, congratulated runners who this year included her husband Duncan, daughters Katie and Rosie, and son-in-law Tom. The annual event is organised by Winchester and Salisbury Rotary Clubs. In 2015, £28,000 was raised for charities chosen by runners and Rotarians. President of Winchester Rotary, Fiona Whitehouse, said, "We had over 1,000 runners this year, which is a great turnout. We have been so lucky with the weather too." As well as the half marathon and full marathon races, there was for the first time a 5-mile fun run.
And in point of fact, 6 people from Winchester Talking Newspaper helped out with the Clarendon Marathon and manned one of the water stations exactly 7 miles before the end. And some of them really looked in a terrific state, I thought, of collapse. And I think we were on the right side of the table, you know, pouring out the squash and so on.
Great.
And following...
It wasn't the volunteers that were in a state of collapse.
No, that's next year. But following on from the running theme, let's continue the running theme. This article's called Marathon Man Ben is a Big Inspiration. Inspirational runner Ben Smith set off from the University of Winchester to run a marathon around the city as part of his challenge of a lifetime. He is nearing the end of his world record attempt to 401 marathons. In fact, he did finish the other day. Or 10,506 miles in 401 days across the UK to raise £250,000 for anti-bullying initiatives. Before setting off on day 394, he gave a talk at the university and spoke movingly about his past experiences of being bullied at school, coming to terms with his sexuality, suffering a mini stroke at the age of just 29 before discovering a passion for running. Sarah Louise Collins, widening participation manager at the university, said before Ben set off on marathon number 394, "Ben's talk really resonated with the audience and many staff, and students now feel personally inspired to challenge bullying and homophobia or push themselves that little more in their own everyday challenges after hearing his story." And in fact, some of us saw him finish, I think, on television the other day, and it was after 401 marathons. It looks as though he'd just run round the corner from the shop.
Well, on a similar theme of running, this is about a runaway ambulance.
It's headed
runaway ambulance crash. A Winchester man was stunned when he was woken up in the early hours to discover that an ambulance had struck his car and destroyed his wall. Retired architect turned artist Keith Bennett was shocked when he found an empty rapid response vehicle had somehow rolled down the hill and crashed into his Volkswagen Golf on his driveway in Beggars Lane. The 79-year-old had only owned the vehicle for a week, and now it is left with damage to both ends, with dents and scratches, as well as the collapsed wall. The incident happened at around 3 a.m. on Saturday. Mr. Bennett said, "The ambulance was parked in St. Martin's Close, and I think it was a brake failure, and it came down St. Martin's Close and hit my Volkswagen Golf and smashed into my sidewall. I was asleep in bed, but the people in St. Martin's Close said they heard a colossal bang." South Central Ambulance Service was unable to comment by the time the Chronicle went to press.
Family run for tragic baby. We've got a running
another
theme,
run.
It seems. Yes, yes. And I've got another one to come as well.
Oh, wow.
So, anyway, the family of a much-loved Winchester baby who died shortly after birth ran the Clarendon Marathon in his memory and to support other bereaved parents. George Edison Woodward was born with serious kidney problems on July the 28th at Princess Anne Hospital in Southampton, and lived for just 27 precious minutes after his lungs failed and medics were unable to save him. His mum, Sam, and his dad, Eric Woodward, who live in Hairstock, wanted something positive to come out of their devastating experience and to raise funds for charities which helped them cope with the death of their first child. Having access to a cuddle cot made a huge difference, they say. The couple were able to spend 4 days with George. The cuddle cot is a cooling blanket or mat which keeps the baby's body, at an appropriate temperature so families can spend longer with their baby. Sam, a program development manager for a major phone company, said, "It helped Eric and me immensely to be able to spend time with George. It is so important for the grieving process. Our families and friends met him too, including my brother, who flew in from Canada. That was important to us, to acknowledge that George existed. It was such a shock being told he had passed away. As time goes on, you are able to take more details in. It gave us a chance to look at our baby's perfect face, to touch and hold his little fingers, and to know what he felt like in my arms. It is having time to have that experience which we would otherwise have missed. It is just so important that we can look back, having had that time, and talk openly about George." A couple who have been married for 2 years also created a memory box with precious first photos and tiny foot and hand prints. Their first major fundraising event was the Clarendon Marathon on Sunday, October the 2nd, between Salisbury and Winchester. Eric ran with his brothers Hugh, Will and Ardie, as well as sister-in-law Mel. The family ran the challenging 26.2-mile route as a relay team, as none of them are runners. Sam watched the race from the finish line at King's School in Winchester to cheer the team on in memory of George and raise money for charity For Louis, that is the figure For Louis, which donates cuddle cots to hospitals. More than £10,400 has already been given by well-wishers on a fundraising page, justgiving.co.uk/runforgeorge, and that is the figure four again, justgiving.co.uk/runforgeorge. The couple say this is enough to buy 8 cuddle cots. They are planning future events to support other charities, including Remember My Baby, which takes professional photos.
Now, for those of you who are suffering from Silver Hill withdrawal symptoms, here's a little piece entitled Silver Hill Plan. Residents in Winchester have begun the process of helping to shape the future of the Silver Hill area. Plans for involving the public in a supplementary planning document, that's an SPD, for Central Winchester regeneration took place at a workshop at the Guildhall. It was attended by representatives from Winchester's business, environmental, architectural communities and councillors. The deputy leader of Winchester City Council and chair of the Central Winchester Regeneration Informal Policy Group, Councillor Victoria Weston, said, "We had input from the City of Winchester Trust, the BID and WINAC. We also had excellent suggestions for which groups of society we should talk to as we develop the project. The council aims to establish a new vision for redevelopment that will reinvigorate Winchester city centre with a mix of commercial, residential and cultural activity and improve local services."
School in line for an architecture award. Westgate School in Winchester, which converted and extended a former boarding house and nursery into a new primary school, has been shortlisted for an architecture award.
Hampshire County Council's in-house property services team have been shortlisted for a Solent Design Award. The team remodelled and extended the former boarding house and nursery to create a new 420-place primary school on the site of the existing secondary school to create Hampshire's first 4-16 all-through school campus. The recognition has particular poignancy for the team, as the project was led by architect Alec Gillies, who sadly died of cancer shortly after the project was completed. Councillor Peter Edgar, the County Council's Executive Member for Education, said Alec was a hugely talented architect, a valued colleague, who is much missed by the team. Westgate School was one of Alec's final projects, so will always be thought of with some sadness but pride at his accomplishments. I know the team think that this shortlisting is just recognition of Alec's vision, design skill and close collaboration with the school on this project. The new primary school was completed in the summer of 2015 with double height open spaces at its core to increase natural height, light and ventilation, which also provides greater flexibility for learning and social cohesion. The brick and slate roof also complements and closely matches the surrounding campus. On and off-site works have also provided additional staff car parking, improved pedestrian routes and parent drop-off and collection. Westgate School was part of a major capital investment programme by Hampshire County Council's Children's Services Department, which delivered over 6,300 new school places between 2013 and 2016.
And still continuing the run series, I read now that villagers vent fury over the run. Villagers are furious at how they were treated by the organisers of the half marathon. They have complained that people in Hursley were given no warning about the level of disruption from the race that attracted more than 1,200 runners. Whilst overall the event has been hailed as a success, raising thousands of pounds for charity, villagers have told a different story. Churchgoers were unable to get to a harvest festival service. Pensioners had to park hundreds of yards away from their homes and walk. And the shop closed early and the King's Head pub was affected. Chris Rees, managing director of the organisers Rees Leisure, has apologised for the way the event was run in the village. Eleanor Bell, chairman of the parish council, said, "It was appalling. There was no advance warning or communication with the village. The post office, I'm told, was 30% down on trade, and the King's Head pub was hit too. The organisers are a commercial organisation making a profit. Why should they be allowed to tell people they are not welcome in their own village? The whole thing was very poor. The organisers have not stopped to think. Only a few houses received flyers, and many were left in the Dolphin pub," said Mrs. Bell, who is also a city councillor. Hitesh Master, the owner of the post office, said, "I was 30% down. I'm not happy. Nobody knew the village was going to be shut down. I closed at 11. What right do they have to close the road at the expense of everyone else?" The King's Head was unavailable for comment. He said they had taken measures to inform the village, but they had clearly been inadequate. "We can certainly do much better. We are sending an apology to the church for disrupting their service and to the parish council. We weren't aware how it was going to affect the village. Maybe we spent too much time on the city, and Hursley, being the only major village on the route, was not given as much time."
Sorry. I should just point out that the that news item referred to the Winchester Half Marathon, which was a completely separate event and on a different day to the Clarendon Run Yes. So they were two completely separate events. So the criticism applying to the Winchester Half Marathon certainly in no way applies to the Clarendon Run.
Correct, yes.
Theatre chief to leave post. Mark Curtis, chief executive of Theatre Royal Winchester, is leaving his post at the end of the year. Having led the theatre for the last 5 years, Mr. Curtis has decided to return to his previous work as a consultant. He leaves at a time when the Winchester venue is achieving record sales and enjoying probably its longest run of financial stability since it reopened in the 1980s. Mr. Curtis has worked hard to increase links with the business community and with artists in the city. He said, "I will be sad to leave this vibrant theatre and its wonderful staff and supporters, but I want to move on to new challenges." Mary Dawson, chairman of the Live Theatre Winchester Trust, which runs the venue, said, "We're very grateful to Mark for all he has done. During his time here, he has made Theatre Royal Winchester the exciting heart of the community." Ms. Dawson added, "Mark has built the theatre's reputation for presenting top-class theatre and has greatly extended our educational and community work. He also saw the organisation successfully take on the running of Hat Fair. Theatre Royal Winchester has begun the recruitment process to find a new chief executive. The theatre is preparing for its single most important event of the year, the Christmas pantomime. This year, the show will be Cinderella, written and directed in-house by James Barry, with music by Simon Slater. The show runs from December the 6th to January the 2nd, and tickets cost from £10 to £23. Now, if you're interested in this particular show, the telephone number of the box office is 01962 840 440. I'll repeat that: 01962 840 440.
Prestigious award for broadcaster. Alresford broadcaster Alistair Stewart has been recognised with a major national award. The newsreader and broadcaster, who lives in Bramdean, received the coveted Charity Champion Award at the prestigious Third Sector Awards recently. He follows in the footsteps of previous winners Lenny Henry and Joe Brand. Mr. Stewart was nominated for his work in support of Naomi House and Jack's Place Hospices at Sutton Scotney, and particularly the organisation's Caterpillar Appeal. A patron of Naomi House and Jack's Place, Mr. Stewart fronted the charity's appeal and helped inspire thousands of people to donate over £4 million to refurbish the region's only children's hospice that cares for children from Hampshire, the Isle of Wight and parts of Dorset, Wiltshire, Berkshire, Surrey and Sussex. The award was presented at a glittering gala dinner and awards ceremony in London. Mr. Stewart said he was thrilled beyond belief to win the award, and it was an honour to be there to wave the flag for Naomi House and Jack's Place. He has worked hard for many charities since first appearing on local TV screens in the 1970s with the then Southern TV. Naomi Paul, celebrity liaison manager at the Teenage Cancer Trust, said he was just the sort of supporter every charity is after, and Naomi House had built a long-term, meaningful relationship with him. "It's amazing to see the incredible impact Alistair has had on fundraising for the rebuild of Naomi House Children's Hospice," she said. "It is fantastic that he has been involved right through the process, and that not only has he given of his own time so generously, but he has also encouraged his contacts to support it too." Alex Feast-Bryce, chief executive of National Ugly Mugs, said, "Every charity needs an Alistair." Keith Wilson, marketing manager at Naomi House and Jack's Place, said, "I've never met anyone quite like Alistair. His passion and enthusiasm for Naomi House and Jack's Place knows no bounds, and we know that if we ever need his help, we only need pick up the phone." He really has gone above and beyond what is expected of a charity patron, and we are delighted that he has been recognised as 2016's Celebrity Charity Champion. Naomi House and Jack's Place provides a comprehensive 24-hour hospice service to children, young people and families from Hampshire, Wiltshire, Dorset, Berkshire, West Sussex, Surrey and the Isle of Wight. The charity currently cares for more than 300 life-limited and life-threatened children and young people.
Daring explorer Sir Ranulph in city to give talk and to open a store. Polar explorer Sir Ranulph Fiennes found his way to Winchester to help launch a new boutique. Sir Ranulph was the star guest at the launch of Burrell's Boutique. At more than 300 packed into the city's great hall, to hear tales of his exploits, including his most recent task, which is to conquer the Global Reach Challenge in a bid to raise funds for Marie Curie. In the challenge, Sir Ranulph has to climb the highest mountain on each continent, as well as visit the South and the North Poles. After Sir Ranulph's talk, guests joined the owners of Burrell's, Edward and Tom Ferris, in the Winchester High Street store, where Bill, company chairman of Burrell's, officially opened it to the public. Lord Lieutenant Nigel Atkinson Esquire, chairman of the County Council, Keith Chapman and Deputy Mayor of Winchester Councillor David McLean attended the event. Edward Ferris, co-owner of Burrell's, said of the evening, "We are thrilled that the Winchester store has received such a wonderful welcome. Winchester is our hometown, so we're really excited to be part of the well-established independent retail community here. All proceeds from the sale of programmes for the evening will be donated to Marie Curie in order to help to care for more people living with a terminal illness."
A bare necessity. Quiz causes a stir. Home Start Winchester has created quite a stir with its plans to hold a naked quiz next Friday. However, clothing will be compulsory, as the event is being sponsored by the Naked Grape of Alsford, and the charity has named its event in the wine merchant's honour. A regular and popular fundraising evening for the Family Support Charity, it will be held in Itchen Abbas Village Hall, and questions will be supplied by quiz inquisitor Mike Davies. Over 150 guests will test their little grey cells and enjoy a delicious supper of lasagna and fudge brownies. The star raffle prize will be a week in a luxury villa in the south of France. Others include dinner at the Cheshill Rectory, golf at the Royal Winchester, House of Lords whiskey, and a hamper from The Good Life. Tickets can be obtained from Sue Barham on 01962 851177. That's 01962 851177.
History Festival is coming to town. BBC History Magazine's History Weekend makes its debut in the ancient capital of Wessex, Winchester, this weekend. The speakers include some high-profile broadcasters and writers, familiar faces from television. Among them will be former Newsnight presenter Peter Snow, who will be joining his son Dan Snow to tell the story of Britain through some of its most important documents, from the 13th century Magna Carta to the late 20th century Tim Berners-Lee's memo for the World Wide Web. Now in its fourth year, the History Weekend is set to be BBC History Magazine's biggest festival to date. It will be split across two venues in Winchester, the Great Hall and the Ashburton Hall in the nearby Queen Elizabeth II Court, the headquarters of Hampshire County Council, from Friday to Sunday, October the 7th to the 9th. Speakers include author and historian Tracy Borman, exploring the private lives of the Tudors, broadcaster and presenter of Any Questions on BBC Radio 4, Jonathan Dimbleby, on the Battle of the Atlantic, How the Allies Won the War, historian and author Dr. Susanna Lipscomb presents 20 leadership lessons we can learn from the Tudors, and Michael Wood will explore Alfred the Great's achievements, asking if he is the greatest Briton. Mr. Wood's talk comes only a couple of weeks before King Alfred Weekend on October 2023, organised by Hyde 900 at St. Bartholomew's Church. The magazine has also joined with the Winchester University to host History Bites sessions, showcasing new research and fresh ideas from university PhD students, research students and staff. The free 10-minute Fringe Festival talks explore topics such as defiant, dissenting and disobedient women of the Great War, the evil they helped to defeat, the Holocaust in British cultural memory, and does historical accuracy matter in TV, films and games? In addition to the talks, Julian Humphreys will be hosting the ever-popular The H for History quiz on Saturday evening, and the University of Winchester's Ryan Lavelle will be leading a historical walk of Winchester. Dave Musgrave, BBC History Magazine's publisher, said, "We are very excited to be bringing our festival to Winchester for the first time. The city is a delight for history lovers, and the venues we've chosen are perfect for our event. I can't wait to listen to our fantastic lineup of speakers delivering their talks in a 13th century great hall in the shadow of a medieval round table." Tickets and full details of the lineup are available on www.historyweekend.com or by calling 0871 620 4021. That is 0871 620 4021. Subscribers to BBC History Magazine can take advantage of a reduced rate for all ticket options, and there are discounts for visitors buying tickets for both the main festival and the fringe event at the university.
Apartment plan for the top two floors of the city's next store. A well-known Winchester store is to be extended and partly turned into apartments if plans are given the green light. Applicant James Tibbles wants to extend 9 to 11 High Street, more commonly known as Next, by building a new floor on top of the current three-story building and, along with its second floor, turn them into luxury flats. Included in the designs, which have been submitted to Winchester City Council, are plans to have a balcony area on both the High Street and Market Lane sides. The apartments will also be in a maisonette style, with a living area on the ground floor and bedrooms on the first. Access to the flats will be from Market Lane. With stunning views looking over the cathedral, the new apartments are expected to sell for a large sum of money. Next, situated on the ground and first floors, is not set to be affected by the plans. A decision is due before the turn of the year. But the application is concerning the City of Winchester Trust preservation watchdogs. The local plan committee was meeting yesterday afternoon as the Chronicle went to press, discussing a report about the issue of offices being converted into homes. It was introduced by the government in 2013 to enable offices to be converted without requiring a planning application to increase the supply of housing. Civic chiefs are now discussing a policy called Article 4 direction that would make such changes harder. But officers are recommending that any changes be delayed 12 months to reduce the chance of the City Council being sued for compensation by developers. Mr. Davis, as former city councillor, said, and he added, it is all too late. It sounds like an incentive for developers to do as much as they can in the next 12 months. Catherine Turness, executive director for Winchester Business Improvement District, said of the new trend for housing to take over parts of shops, until next it was not really affecting retail, but this could be the start of a change.
Royal series filmed in city to air on streaming service. It is one of the most expensive television series ever made by Netflix, and it even saw Winchester Street get blown up. Now, The Crown, portraying the early life of our monarch, Queen Elizabeth, and Prince Philip, is to be aired by the online streaming service on November the 4th. The series, which it is suggested cost more than £100 million, saw part of Winchester city centre come to a standstill in January. The streets were busy with camera crews in Cannon Street, College Street and Kingsgate Street. Directors were filming a part of the series set during the Second World War, in which they depicted the historic city's streets as 1940s London and Windsor. Hundreds of fans gathered to get a glimpse of the filming, which stars former Doctor Who Matt Smith as a young Prince Philip and Claire Foy as Elizabeth. The fans were greeted by a large bomb crater in front of the Wickham Arms pub in Kingsgate Street, soldiers in Second World War uniforms, people in period fashion and wartime vehicles. Filming also took place at the city's famous Guildhall and at the Great Hall. The show is written by Peter Morgan, who also wrote Frost Nixon and the 2006 Oscar-winning film The Queen. It will focus on the Queen's early reign, revealing personal intrigues, romances and political rivalries behind events that shaped the second half of the 20th century. It will span 60 episodes over six series. Councillor Fiona Mather, who represents Winchester City Council's St Michael Ward, where the filming took place, briefly saw some of the action while walking her dog. She said in January, it's really great that filmmakers want to come to Winchester. I was very impressed by how they've made the artificial bomb crater and by putting a mat down and putting rubble there. Quite a lot of things have been filmed in Winchester, and living around this area, we're used to having these enormous lorries and canteens for the actors. But she said some residents have been concerned about parking and added, not everyone agrees with it, but on the whole, most people think it's a price worth paying.
Corrie Starr visits children at hospice. She is the TV star who has gone from Coronation Street to the jungle, but was most recently spotted paying a visit to Naomi House. Helen Flanagan took time out of her busy schedule to visit the hospice in Sutton Scotney. The 26-year-old actress is best known for playing Rosie Webster in the ITV soap Coronation Street. In her visit to Naomi House, she got messy, helping with some arts and crafts activities and spent time touring the charity's state-of-the-art facilities. She also spent time with the Naomi House and Jack's Place nursing team, learning about the complexities of their job and the support they offer families on good days and last days. Helen said, it was a pleasure to visit Naomi House and Jack's Place hospices, where the staff and facilities were amazing. I was overwhelmed by the care provided for these young people and the commitment to give these children some independence and dignity. Helen has also agreed to appear at the charity's forthcoming Foam Fest Fun Run at Bewley Motor Museum in the New Forest.
Visitors reap joys of harvest. The cathedral celebrates agriculture and local produce and scarecrows. A harvest weekend attracted hundreds of people and also scores of scarecrows. Winchester Cathedral hosted the annual event over the weekend. The focus of the free family weekend was to celebrate local agriculture and produce, featuring independent Hampshire producers who provided insight into one of the most important aspects of the county's economy. There was also a wide range of displays and activities for people of all ages. The ever-popular scarecrow competition returned again for this year's show. Families and school groups made inventive straw people from recycled materials which were on show around the building. The whole event was supported by a number of partnerships, notably the New Forest Show, National Farmers Union, Country Landowners Association, Hampshire County Council, and Hampshire Fair. Canon Rowley Ream, acting Dean of the Cathedral, said, "Harvest Festival is a long-established tradition in the church, but one which we are keen to refresh, to reflect the realities of agriculture and farming life in our county today. We want to celebrate the harvest and bless God for it, but also raise awareness of what is fair and sustainable."
That concludes our extracts for the week. Our thanks to our editors, who were Sue Frayne, Pat Whitfield and Jane Thomas, and to our various technical teams. And thanks to our readers, Margot Meredith.
Goodbye.
John Richards.
Goodbye.
And Peter Lydiard.
Goodbye.
And from me, John Parker, goodbye too. Please return the memory stick as soon as you're able, not forgetting to put your address label inside the envelope.